Hey, super friends, if you're a fan of the Geek History Lesson podcast, then you might be a fan of my new nonfiction book called Super Soldiers, which is available for pre-order now on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, IndieBound, and Apple Books. It is a salute to the comic book heroes and villains who fought for their country. It is an examination of military superheroes and an examination of my own military service. I think it's pretty sweet. Ashley thinks it's pretty sweet, right, Ashley?
I do think it's pretty sweet.
And Mitch Garrod's the co-author of Mr. Miracle and the Sheriff of Babylon says this about my book: Jason Inman's Super Soldiers is a brilliant examination of fictional service enlisted in very real wars, a topic near and dear to my heart, and in one chapter in, you'll realize that Inman's words are all heart. So if you can't take the review of Mitch Garrod's, an amazing comic book creator, then I don't know whose review you can take seriously. So please go check it out. Super Soldiers is available pre-order right now. It's a book that I'm very proud of. And if you enjoy this podcast, I think you'll really enjoy it. So please pre-order my book, Super Soldiers. It comes out June 18th.
The X-Men are dedicated to protecting mankind, even those who hate and fear them.
That's right. And we are going to determine today the top five X-Men stories, because your geek history lesson is now in session. Hello and welcome to Geek History Lesson. I am Jason, Homo Superior Inman.
I am Ashley Victoria Robinson. Welcome to the Mind University, because you have stumbled onto the podcast where we take one character, construct, or mutant team from popular culture and teach you everything you need to know about them in about an hour. Except this week, we're doing one of our classic list episodes. Jason, what are we talking about this week?
X-Men stories.
Yes, I can't wait to dive into the Dark Angel Saga, everyone's favorite.
The Dark Angel Saga?
Yeah, 2011, bad. It's an alternate reality Age of Apocalypse retelling of the Dark Phoenix Saga.
Oh, that's from X-Force, right?
Yeah, it's bad.
Yeah, we're not going to talk about that. But if you like it, that's all good.
That's cool. Yeah, that's these, totally fine. Again, but this, spoiler alert, it's not on our list.
This list, of course, is not an objective list, as no. We say. This is our favorites, the ones that connected the most with us, and ones that we think you should really check out. I can guarantee you right now, nobody is going to predict my number one at all. I've been hinting to Ashley for a while that she would never be able to guess my number one, but we're talking about this because there's a little movie that came out that very few people saw called,
yeah, according to box office,
Dark Phoenix, which is about a bunch of Homo Superior characters yelling Jean because Jean is blowing stuff up.
Yeah, again.
Now, Ashley, before we jump into our best X-Men stories, our top five X-Men stories, according to us, what is your connection to X-Men? Ashley, are they one of your favorites, one of your least favorites? How do you feel about the
X-Men?
For
a long time, X-Men were the only Marvel book I read.
Oh, really?
Like, for probably, like, maybe 18 years.
They were the first Marvel comic you ever read, too?
Yes.
Okay. Do you remember what it was?
No.
Okay.
I don't. I, like many people, got in through the 90s cartoon, although yep. X-Men Evolution is my X-Men cartoon love. We do have a request to teach the history of the X-Men cartoons, which would kind of be like our Pixar. It would be like a little more real world based.
Sure.
Perhaps we'll get to that
we'd
someday.
Probably have to divide that per series, I think.
I think so.
It might be a fun documentary series, but if that's something you guys think sounds cool,
let us know. It might be something we could do like Crisis Club.
Yeah, where could they let us know, Ashley?
Oh, you could do that at facebook.com/geekhistorylesson, geekhistorylesson.com, on Twitter at @GHLpodcast, or if you're a patron, you know there's a bunch of ways that you can contact us there, but
yeah,
those are the best ways to be in touch with us.
That'd be an interesting thing to conquer over a year, similar to our book club stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, like once a month we check in, like, what's the next X-Men cartoon?
Mm-hmm.
So
the X-Men cartoons were my first in. Nightcrawler and Wolverine are my X-Men loves. I love them so much. And then I was pretty young when the first couple X-Men movies came out, so they've always been a big part of my life, and they were the first, and like I said, for a while, the only Marvel comics I read regularly. So,
sure.
How about you?
I first got into X-Men right before the giant Age of Apocalypse storyline. The X-Men were fine to me. I enjoyed them. I actually did have a subscription to Uncanny X-Men for quite a while when it was like the big, it was post Age of Apocalypse, pre Onslaught, when it was Joe Madureira and Scott Lobdell writing, which I think to me is like key X-Men. Like, it's perfect, like right in there, X-Men. And, you know, the X-Men are a group of characters that I love sometimes and then I hate sometimes. And then I love sometimes and then I hate sometimes. I've never consistently loved the X-Men. I've always fallen out of love with them and then I've re-got back into them and then I've fallen in love with them and then I hate them again. So I guess just like teenagers.
Yeah, in a lot of ways.
Yeah, there you go. You know, I would not call X-Men my favorite Marvel thing, but I do think there is something compelling to those stories. And we might talk some more about that in our Geek History Lesson Extra. There's some stuff I want to get into specifically about the X-Men, but that's not here.
Can I ask you a quick question?
Sure.
If people just aren't familiar or if they're newer listeners, who are some of your favorite X-Men characters?
Cyclops.
Yeah.
Cyclops is my favorite X-Men character. I love Cable.
Mm-hmm.
I love X-Man.
Jason's
Gray.
Just looking at the action figures.
Yes, I have an X-Man action figure. I don't have that many X-Man action figures. I do like Magneto.
Mm-hmm.
I like Charles Xavier. I like Mystique.
Mm-hmm.
I think she's really cool. You know, I don't know. I'm very much into the Summers Clan.
Yeah, just so people kind of have maybe a point of view of where our opinions
are. Yeah, you're Nightcrawler, right?
Yeah, all the way.
Yeah.
That's why he's one of the only character voices I do on this show.
That's good. I would be careful about Nightcrawler because there's a special friend that always calls in every time that Nightcrawler appears.
Yeah, Nightcrawler might stay in bed for most of this episode. Maybe he'll pop up for the extra.
Yes. Our special friend, Tex Willerman, has a sixth sense when Nightcrawler appears, and he may show up.
Yeah.
I don't think this is a proper Tex Willerman
episode. One of my goals for down the line is to have a Tex Willerman Piggly Wiggly t-shirt made.
He owns Piggly Wigglies.
He does.
All right. Let's drop into this list. Of course, we're going to do it from 5 to 1. Again, this is not objective. This is our favorites. These are ones that we think are best.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no right. There's no wrong. Ashley, what's your number 5?
My number 5 is a single issue. All the rest of mine are runs or they are collections.
Mine are all runs. I don't think I have a single issue.
This is a single issue. It is from 1963. It is The X-Men number 1.
Oh, Uncanny X-Men number 1? Or is it X-Men?
It's called The X-Men.
Oh, okay.
Number 1.
Ah.
It's the original first time intro to X-Men. And I don't generally include in these lists a lot of their OG original origin story because I think down the way it gets revisited or reexamined in a better way. But the X-Men are one of the only teams where their origin is basically the same and baked in stone. Even when we see this origin revisited in something like All New X-Men, and that Brian Michael Bendis kind of launched the Marvel Now wave with. It's all the same players. It's all the same beats. And everything that we love from the movies is right here in this first issue. And if you examine something like Avengers number 1, which Jason has read ad nauseum and we've talked about on the podcast before, there's a lot of changes that the Avengers undergo, including the Ultimate Universe, to get to the versions that we love and we're familiar with cinematically.
Mm-hmm.
But the X-Men number 1, it's all there. Professor X is there. Cyclops, Beast, Iceman, Angel, and Jean Grey, who is Marvel Girl at the time.
And Magneto.
And Magneto is set up as their villain. Also, Marvel Girl, my favorite Jean Grey costume. It's so cute. I love
it. Oh, you like it where they hide her head?
I like it. I like it with her really big dumb. I'm acting it out in podcasting, a famously visual medium, with the domino mask that has the really high points and the dress. Like, for me, it's a perfect 60s comic book girl costume.
Mm-hmm. That costume comes later, by the way. It's not in that first issue.
Oh, is this the one where her head is completely covered?
Yeah.
Oops.
No, it's okay. That costume is great. The you're talking about the green and yellow costume where she has the points.
I thought that was the original one, but you're right. X-Men number 1, they're all in the blue and yellow.
They all have those cowls, like Cyclops, which it's a little weird for her.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. That's why I was asking. I was like, oh, you like the cowl?
Sorry, my mistake.
Yeah,
I also saw a picture of that very recently. I also really like this first issue because when you go and revisit it, you can find it online. You can find it on Marvel Unlimited. Mm-hmm. This is a very easy issue to get your hand, even to get your hands on a reading copy. You can get like a reading copy of this for a fairly reasonable price.
Okay.
If you want a good copy of it, it's very expensive, but you can get a reading copy for a decent price. Even in this first issue, you get the civil rights allegory. It's baked in here. Maybe the Malcolm X, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. analysis is something that gets fully formed a little bit later, but you can see how much of the social justice undertones are here. And what I really admire about this team is this is nowhere near the first comic book team. ever to happen. Justice League had happened by this, or Justice Society
Avengers
had happened
and
this
Fantastic
point.
Four have happened by this point.
Teen Titans is just around the corner. Even in those weird cowls, all of these characters are pretty unique, and their powers aren't necessarily complementary. Like, we don't have a fire and ice, we just have Iceman. They all do something very different. You have your muscle, you have your intellect, you have your leader, you have your stealth. And even though we don't have, like, you think of maybe Storm, Nightcrawler, Kitty Pryde, and Wolverine as being integral members of the X-Men, their inclusion and every X-Men team going forward is based off of this. I think this is one of the most fully formed first issues and intros to a super team, so I wanted to include it in my list.
Interesting.
Yeah. So, Jason, what is your number five?
My number five is the updated version of what you just said.
Hey, look at that.
Mine is Ultimate X-Men number 1-6, the storyline called The Tomorrow People. Now, in the year 2000, the X-Men titles were very impossible to read, and there was so much continuity. So, of course, Marvel brought in the great DC writer Grant Morrison to reboot the series. But at the same time, they decided to reboot another X-Men series in this new universe called the Ultimate Universe, which was basically like, what if the X-Men were created in the 2000s? And this was written by Mark Miller, and I believe it was drawn by the Kubert brothers. I think they traded off. Now, this has the same stuff. It has the mutants being recruited. I believe the first issue is about recruiting Iceman. And it's about the team fighting Magneto and his Brotherhood of Mutants. Now, the interesting thing about this is that the entire team has black and yellow costumes inspired by the movie because it's post-2000. Wolverine shows up at the very end, and it's a mix of the team. It's not the classic team, but the classic team are all there. Now, the interesting thing about that is that this is all updated. And also, this book is a little meaner, which I like, because I think the X-Men books should be a little meaner, especially since they're dealing with social issues and with racism and bigots and stuff like that. Like, that's a little bit, you know, stronger than normal comic book. I'm going to punch a thief in the face there. There are moments where Jean Grey actually activates her love relationship with Wolverine. She hops into bed. Magneto terrorizes President Bush, and it is President Bush on the White House lawn. Magneto's invasion is actually successful. But the reason why I really dig this is because this comes off like an X-Men movie, and it feels like the most streamlined version of the X-Men I ever could have come up with. And that's why I was really attracted to this. Wolverine joins the X-Men in this to assassinate Charles Xavier. He is a plant by Magneto. And then when Wolverine and Jean Grey sleep together, Cyclops leaves the X-Men and joins the Brotherhood of Mutants. So there's all these little turns where this feels like it is the Netflix series of the X-Men. And I think it is really held up. And I also think that this is one of the best entry points for anybody reading the X-Men, because you do not need to know anything. And
which is not something you can say about most X-Men stories. They're mostly steeped in continuity and nonsense.
Most of them you cannot hand to people.
Yeah.
Yours, you just said. And I think this one is, I love this. This was the comic that brought me back into comics, because I left because I had noticed women, and I had noticed other things that had intrigued my life more than comic books. And this was the comic book where I was like, hey, Wolverine has a soul patch? Wolverine is literally clawing the street. He's moving so fast. The first cover of Ultimate X-Men is Wolverine is moving so fast, and his claws are scratching along the highway, and the sparks are flying. And you're like, wow. I also think the Ultimate X-Men logo is really, really cool. And I think most of their costumes are really, really cool. Now, Mark Miller goes on to create a pretty solid 30-issue run. And if all you read is the first 30 issues of Mark Miller's run of this run, it's solid. Now, Brian K. Vaughan goes on to do a run. Robert Kirkman goes on to do a run. Mixed bag. But the first 30 issues of Mark Miller's run are very solid. They establish Magneto as this impossible threat. Magneto is a murderer. And also, this was where the first version of Magneto is the person who causes Charles Xavier's wheelchair problems, because Magneto in this version shoves a
First Class, Jason?
No, First Class gets it from this,
which
actually
Jason also loves.
I love First Class. But this is Ultimate X-Men. A lot of people are probably like, yeah, it's a little too far out there. It is Michael Bay X-Men. But I know that that's not selling it well, but it is so...
Action movie X-Men.
It's action movie X-Men.
The way Birthright is that for Superman.
Sure, exactly. But there's soap operas, and I think the characters are so well... The twists and turns in this are amazing. And also, I'm going to give mad credit to Mark Miller for making Colossus LGBTQ.
Yeah, I love that.
I think that's one of the best changes they made. They completely... Because Kitty Pryde is so much younger.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So they pair off Kitty Pryde with Iceman because Iceman is younger. It's weird for Colossus, who's in his 20s, to be fixated on a 14-year-old Chris Claremont.
It's not like that hasn't stopped comics in the past, but the entire Japanese market.
Ultimate X-Men, it's called The Tomorrow People. It's the first six issues. That is my number five X-Men story.
I like that as a subtitle for an X-Men story, The Tomorrow People. That's very cool.
All of Mark Miller's subtitles are amazing. His finale, the finale arc of his run, not without no spoilers, called Return of the King.
Love it. did Mark Miller write that Spider-Man Max series?
I mean, he wrote a Spider-Man Max series.
Did he write the one
called Down Amongst the Dead Men?
Is that the one with all the villains?
Yes.
That's interesting because there's a
with Terry Dodson.
There's a classically straight character who gets an LGBT twist in that as well.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I have that collection as well. I like that.
Yeah, it's great.
Run.
I read it because you gave it to me.
I have no apologies. I am a Mark Miller fan. Mark Miller
there's
has
no reason to apologize.
Mark Miller has bad storylines, but I find generally he pushes the medium in good ways.
I agree. I would agree with that.
So there you go. That's my number five.
Cool.
Ashley, what's your number four?
My number four comes about 30 years after my number five. Smackdown in kind of like the Bat Family time, both the best and worst X-Men era, the 90s.
Okay.
It is X-Men Age of Apocalypse.
All right. I am going to punt this. Because it is on my list.
Is it higher up?
It's higher up. I could talk about it now.
We can pin it for then if you want.
No, it's all good. It's all good. You can go ahead and talk about it.
So X-Men Age of Apocalypse, the book is truly so wonderful. Don't let the title it shares with the movie keep you from checking this out.
Mm-hmm. And it's an entire crossover.
It is. It crosses over. The Age of Apocalypse world encompasses Excalibur, Gambit, and the Externals.
Gambit and the Externals. Can I try to name them all?
Okay, yeah, go for
it. Okay, okay. So you said Excalibur,
Gambit and the Externals.
Okay, there's X-Man.
Yes.
Okay. There's Astonishing X-Men.
Yes.
There is, what's the other X-Men? They both have different subtitles. Is it Sensational X-Men?
No, it's another A adjective.
I don't know. What is it?
Amazing
X-Men. Okay. Then there's Factor X.
Yes.
There is, good Lord, I've forgotten them.
Okay, so
I knew, I used to know
also,
them.
Wait,
Generation Next.
Yes.
There's Generation Next. And then.
You're missing two.
Oh, I'm missing two.
One is.
Can you give me a hint?
So you said Weapon X.
Yes.
The other one, it's a synonym for weapon. Starts with an F.
I mean, I already said Factor X.
You did not say Factor X.
Oh, yeah, I did.
So, okay, Factor X. Then you're missing one.
I need a hint on this then.
It also starts with an X.
That does not help me.
It's a synonym for what do you call it? So right there's the Earth and then there's the solar system. What's that?
X-Universe?
Yes.
Okay, that was.
And then there's two one-shots, X-Men Alpha and X-Men Omega that bookended as well.
Yeah,
so you name them all.
X-Men Alpha begins it and X-Men Omega ends it. And then when they go back to the regular universe, X-Men Prime. We should probably explain what the Age of Apocalypse
is. Right. Also,
sorry.
Just if you're interested, there's
fun.
An X-Men animated series, two-part episode that does this in very broad strokes called One Man's Worth. That came out around the same time. So why you should read this is because everything that's currently going on kind of deals with this. Like, it starts with Legion.
Mm-hmm.
This was the first time I'd ever met Legion, and
me too.
I promptly forgot about him because I think he's dumb until he had
a television.
He has
the worst haircut in comics.
Truly the worst haircut. So he's... Professor X's son from the future. He comes back in time because he wants to kill Magneto, but he winds up killing Charles, and as a result, Apocalypse invades 10 years earlier.
So he kills. So he's not from the future. He's actually from our present day. And he travels.
Oh, well, the notes I have say he's from the
and
future.
He travels back to the 1960s.
Oh, that's right. But in the future of that event.
Exactly.
Yes,
and
you're right.
He meets Charles Xavier and Magneto in their 20s.
Yes.
And he tries to kill Magneto because he's like, my dad doesn't like me, but my dad will like me if I kill his mortal enemy. And in the fray, Charles jumps in front of the shot and dies. And because of this, there are no X-Men. Charles never makes the X-Men.
To fend off Apocalypse. The Horsemen. And so they start this new universe / timeline / age.
Where Apocalypse takes over the world.
And then the Bishop.
Or at least North America.
Bishop winds up getting sent back in time to protect Professor Xavier.
Now that's an interesting adjustment.
And reestablish the present day timeline.
Yes, sort of. Okay, so Bishop.
I'm trying to like broad strokes this as
much
as possible.
I want to get in the weeds.
Hard.
I want to get in the weeds on this one.
This just tells you this is like a classically complicated X-Men story, and it's truly one of the best X-Men stories.
Bishop is one of the X-Men that is sent back in time to the 60s to stop Legion. So
To save Xavier from being killed.
Exactly. But he's not sent back into the Age of Apocalypse.
He's sent back into like the prime 616 timeline.
So when Legion kills Xavier and the timeline flips.
Yeah.
Bishop is the only one who remembers the old timeline. So Bishop has to suffer through 20 years of the Age of Apocalypse until he meets Magneto and his X-Men. And Bishop has to convince Magneto and his X-Men, because in this universe, Magneto forms the X-Men in honor of Charles.
Yeah.
And Magneto marries Rogue. And there's all kinds of changes.
Talking about men who are too old to be messing around with the women.
Yeah, and Bishop has to convince Magneto to rewrite his universe. Mm-hmm. And Magneto has a son named Charles.
Yes.
So, but continue. I'm sorry. I just love the Age of Apocalypse. I'm going to get it right.
I think that was about as far as my explanation of this could go without totally spoiling it. It's completely amazing. This is... what's interesting about Age of Apocalypse is it kind of sets the bar for a lot of time travel alternate universe nonsense. Like, it is in one hand the very best at this kind of X-Men nonsense, but because this was so loved, so revered, and so popular, you get so many cruddy reduxes of this. So this Earth, the Age of Apocalypse Earth, is Earth 295. It shows up in the 2015 Secret Wars.
Yes, because they what they've decided to do is that there is an alternate world where that actually happened.
Yeah, and it was never undone.
But in the main continuity of the X-Men, now we have to talk about, and actually I'm just going to reveal, Age of Apocalypse is my number three.
Wow, okay. Well, 4 and 3, they're close.
It's my number three. Mm. The reason why it's my number three is because I'm going to say it right now. This is the height of art on the X-Men.
Joe Madureira.
There is Joe Madureira, Chris Bacalo, Steve Epting, Andy Kubert, Adam Kubert, all working on X-Men books at the same time.
There's actually, can I read you the full list?
Yeah, there's probably more. I'm probably missing some.
Yeah, Roger Cruz, Steve Epting, Joe Madureira, Andy Kubert, Tony Daniel, Salvador LaRocca, Chris Bacalo, Adam Kubert, Ken Lashley, Steve Scrouse, Terry Dodson, Ian Churchill, Carlos Pacheco, and Joe Bennett, which is not counting any alternate cover artists, pinups, or colorists. Just the pencilers.
That is
and
murderous
Jason named
artists.
Especially for the time. Yes. I mean, these are still phenomenal.
All of these
artists.
Guys are amazing.
And it's because Jason mentioned there's like 10 books that cross over. I mean, the writers too. It's Scott Libdell, Mark Waid, Fabian Nyeza, John Francis Moore, Larry Hama, Warren Ellis, Jeff Loeb, Howard Mackey, and Terry Kavanagh.
Now, we have to talk about the reason why this crossover is so huge is that this is pre-internet.
Yeah.
This is almost pre. I think this might even beat Wizard a little bit. I don't know, but Wizard wasn't
this
around
was
95 that much.
5 and 94.
I thought it was.
Well, the internet says 95, 96.
Oh, I thought it was. I'm very certain it's 94. But anyways, whatever. This stopped every X-Men title. So what happened is that they had like 10 X-Men titles at the time. They stopped publication of every X-Men title, and then for the next 4 months these titles were renamed, like, you know, again, X-Factor became Factor X, Uncanny X-Men became Astonishing X-Men, X-Men became Amazing X-Men, Cable became X-Men, and they were published under these banners for 4 months. 4 months.
Which in publication time, especially having worked in a comic book store, is an eternity.
It's huge. And I don't think they gave anybody warning that this was going to happen. It was changing. I think this is the reason why I bought these X-Men comics, mm-hmm. was because I was like, what is going on? What is happening here?
And this is also well before we had a new event every month, every six months.
Yes, it was.
This was... I wasn't even reading like new comics, mm-hmm. at the time, but when you do any research about this or you listen to any of the creators, like, this was truly like earth shattering.
The reason why this event is still talked about today
and still in print
is because, number one, I'm gonna say it right now, it is, I don't know if we did this episode already or not. I think we did. This is the best Marvel crossover. It is.
We did, but I don't remember.
I don't remember when. Anyways. And the other reason is because this is a storyline. For all the mumbo jumbo that we talked about, it is very simple to understand because it is Lord of the Rings with a time travel twist. Mm-hmm. Apocalypse is Sauron.
Yeah.
And we need to get Bishop to the time portal, which is controlled by Apocalypse,
yeah.
to reset the timeline. So X-Men, can we get Bishop there?
Also,
I don't know.
It feels epic in that way because X-Men deals in a very moral gray area, which is what's very cool and unique about the X-Men. But a lot of their villains are often not true villains, like Magneto, yep. for example, like various X-Men who've turned bad, vice versa. Emma Frost is allowed to be a good guy now, whatever. Apocalypse is just a bad dude.
Mm-hmm. And this is also a world where the mutants won.
Yeah.
The mutants are the top class, and they call humans flat scans.
Yeah.
I love this crossover. I think it is so good. And the reason why it is my number three is because it is hard to talk about great X-Men stories without talking about this.
Right. And, you know, we're going to have, and I think we'll discuss this, I'm suspecting we are going to leave the same pretty major X-Men event off of our list because we do not like it.
Okay, let's just drop it right now.
Dark Phoenix is not on either of our lists.
Dark Phoenix is not on my list either.
Because we don't like Phoenix.
Well,
and because I think the Dark Phoenix saga, mm-hmm. has arrested the X-Men.
I agree.
We keep going back to it. It wasn't good. And Jason actually has a really interesting theory that the only people who like it are the people who experienced it in real time.
I think when you experience it in real time, because I think, one, the X-Men dealing with a cosmic space entity that looks like a bird is ridiculous. Two, I'm not a huge fan of the X-Men being in space.
I don't like X-Men in space either.
I don't like the X-Men in space. And then three, they have tried to replicate the Phoenix storyline so many times with diminishing returns every single time. I think also that's the reason why they've tried to make it in a movie twice and it hasn't worked either time.
Failed both times.
It's failed both times.
In our Jean Grey episode, which I taught as well, Jean Grey's died and come back like seven times.
Mm-hmm.
And that's another reason why this is kind of what Dark Phoenix Saga is what set the bar for that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why it's cheap and it doesn't matter. Every time it happens, we're like, I don't care. She's coming. But
Age of Apocalypse
is lauded and it is renowned.
They made an action figure line of Age of Apocalypse back in the 90s.
They made a movie as loosely as you want.
It's not even close.
Titled it because, mm-hmm. it's so lauded.
I will say right now,
and that's why we like it.
They should have done Age of Apocalypse as a movie. Think about this.
Absolutely.
X-Men trilogy. Movie one is Legion.
Yeah.
Blah, 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 blah. The cliffhanger is he resets the timeline. Movie two, Age of Apocalypse.
Living in it.
It is the alternate, yeah. timeline. Apocalypse has taken over America. Magneto's in charge of the X-Men. At the end of that movie, we change it back. And then the third movie is like we're back to normal, you know, and the timeline has changed maybe, blah, 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 blah. But Age of Apocalypse, they should have just made an Age of Apocalypse trilogy.
Yes. And my other hot take is that Apocalypse should have gone away after Age of Apocalypse. Because he is another character that they keep bringing back because this was so huge.
And this is his best storyline.
And it's diminishing returns as well.
I agree. I will say the Apocalypse that's in this storyline is not quite the Apocalypse that shows up later, different timeline.
That's true. Also, there's an Apocalypse child.
Yes, that's later on. That has nothing to do with this.
No. But I mean, like, there are other versions of Apocalypse.
But
out
I
there.
Will say this, too, as a person who was reading this live and was picking this off, mm-hmm. the stands live, it was also cool to see the impact from this because Bishop remembers the Age of Apocalypse.
Yeah.
And that becomes an ongoing X-Men storyline where X-Men villains figure out that there was this other timeline. Even Apocalypse figures it out and is like, ooh, how do I get back to that? And then characters like Nate Gray, the alternate Cable, survives. X-Men gets a sixth issue and goes on for 75 issues.
Yeah.
That's astounding. That's crazy.
Well, 'cause people liked it.
It was the best one. It was the best one.
I also think Age of Apocalypse is a good mix between sort of the action movie X-Men version that I think you were leaning toward with your Mark Miller choice, and the very like intellectual, we are teaching a lesson version that I was leaning toward by picking the X-Men number
one. Well, like I said,
like it's a good marriage of those two things.
And yes, and Age of Apocalypse seems dangerous. That's what I'm going to keep saying. Like, to me, the X-Men are dangerous. They should have this danger and this life and death feeling to it that, you know, because it's people fighting for their very well-being. The Avengers do not do that.
Yeah, they're literally fighting for their lives and their rights. And
yeah, there you go. So that was my number three. It was your number four.
Number four. So, Jason, what's your number four?
My number four is what I think is easily the best Chris Claremont story that he has ever written. And it was the ending of the John Byrne, Chris Claremont run, which many people think is the greatest X-Men run. I would argue it is definitely up there. Mm-hmm. Days of Future Past.
That's my number three.
Yep.
So we just swapped them. That's so funny.
It's Uncanny X-Men number 141 to 142.
Which, by the way, we have a very early OG Geek History lesson where we read and reviewed it because the movie was coming
out. By the way, I want to talk about that. It's interesting that you and I, for our threes and fours, put these alternate timeline X-Men stories. They're both alternate timeline X-Men stories. Which the X-Men, by the way, has thousands. Basically, the storyline of this is an older Kitty Pryde is sent back in time to prevent an assassination that leads to the rise of the Sentinels and the beginning of enslavement for all mutants. Now, these are only, it's only two issues. It got a
but
whole,
boy, is it wordy.
It got a whole movie based around it. It's got the classic scene where Wolverine gets incinerated by Sentinels. I think the reason why this is one of the greatest X-Men storylines, this is my number four, and the reason why I put it lesser than Age of Apocalypse is that I think the idea is more important than the execution, but also I have a hard time thinking about this. I don't know if there's another alternate timeline comic book storyline that I can think off the top of my head before this. Or that hits as hard as this one.
I mean, there very well could be. I certainly don't have... There's a good chance Fantastic Four did some version
but
of
we
it.
But we all know the two covers for these issues. The Sentinel about to fry Wolverine, and then...
them standing in front of the pictures.
The poster, slain, murdered, missing. Slain, murdered, missing.
And truly, every major independent comic has done a parody of that. Every Marvel title has done a parody of that cover. It's iconic. The reason for me that I put this above Age of Apocalypse is because it has two of my favorite characters in it. Like, it just circles around two characters that I love more. So, very, very interesting that we both put it on our
list. It's good. It's my favorite Chris Claremont story is Days of Future Past because I think it's so short. It's very quick to the point, but yet it's very... very powerful.
I think this is the first time, too, that you get a sense of what a real... that Kitty Pryde is a badass. Because Kitty Pryde is very much introduced to be like a young ingenue, Wolverine's kind of young girl I'm taking under my wing sidekick. And she's kind of whiny in her original. And this is the first time you get to see her really come into her own. She's really powerful. There's a cool moment where... so she's mostly known for the phase powers, right?
Yes.
She learns that she can make her molecules so light that she can walk on air. It's really, really cool. And it's nice to see her play a more powerful role, which X-Men, even though Jean Grey is not my favorite character, X-Men has always done a good job at having a powerful female who is able to take advantage of the fact that people underestimate her. I understand why in the movie they sent Wolverine back instead of Kitty Pryde.
Because it's Hugh Jackman, baby.
But I kind of wished it had been Kitty Pryde because, like, that's the classic one.
I know.
Well, I wish it was played by a different person.
Yes, exactly. That's the whole reason why I'm glad it wasn't Kitty Pryde.
I would have liked to have seen the classic execution of it. I also think Days of Future Past is a really...
great title.
Great title. Well, Age of Apocalypse, great title. is it's a really intelligent use of Wolverine, because once Wolverine was invented, thank you, Len Wein, may you rest in power, they shove Wolverine in everything. Wolverine is often not well used.
Well, he's like the most popular X-Men, so yeah.
I get it. This is an intelligent use of Wolverine in both the comic book and the movie adaptation. And it makes sense why he's the one who survived this long as well, compared to like Cyclops and Storm, who've all been brutally murdered.
Yeah, it's interesting too. I want to say, like, the other impressive thing about Days of Future Past is that, again, no warning. Like,
they just undid it.
If you're reading you're reading that book in the 1980s, and then suddenly your next issue is all the X-Men are dead, you're like, what?
Yeah.
Happened here? So just like Age of Apocalypse, no warning.
Well, you know what? I'm sure previews was not a thing, and neither was the internet, so they could truly do whatever they wanted to.
So
So that's my number four, and no.
Days
your
of
number four.
Days of Future Past is my number four. It's
my
your number,
number
three. And Age of Apocalypse is my number three. You're number four.
Great.
So
we're doing really good at numbers.
Ding dong, ding dong. Hey, Ashley, I think we have a guest at the door. Ding dong, ding dong.
Oh, okay.
I'm gonna answer the door.
Uh-huh.
And I'm going to go to the bathroom, and then I'm going to let our guest in, okay?
Okay, I will wait here.
Okay.
Jason is leaving. We're waiting for whoever to come in. Hi?
Hello. I'm looking for hope. My name is Charles Xavier.
Oh my gosh, thank you so much for joining us for a top five X-Men story.
You're welcome. Of course, I'm who the X-Men are named after.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Ashley, correct. Wait, I know that. I read your mind.
Well, that was really polite of you to ask. That's really sweet.
Well,
thank
I
you.
Try. I'm looking for hope in your brain.
Did you find any?
Yes. Did you know that I can help you make a professional website?
Whoa, with your brain?
But, well, no. Not with my brain. That's not how websites work. I can help you make a professional website with Wix.
Whoa.
That's correct.
That's Wix?
Yes, W-I-X. You can start and publish your website for free. We can scroll through the 500 stunning templates.
Ooh.
Maybe we can find one that creates hope. We can add our own text and images and videos of myself, Eric Lenscher, us standing on a boat, fishing, video backgrounds, galleries, menus, forms, and I could give you a social bar that would take you straight to my Instagram, where there are many pictures of me in a bathtub.
Ooh, I'm here for it.
Yes. So, Ashley, does that sound impressive to you?
Well, Professor, I think by reading my mind, you can tell that it does.
I did, and I can, and please stop thinking about me in the bathtub.
Oh, well.
And please,
it's gonna be tough.
Get started now by going to Wix.com. That's Wix.com/podcast to get 10% off your Wix website. You can improve your current website by going to Wix.com/podcast. Did you know it's hassle-free?
I didn't.
Yes. So you're saying, oh, wait, hold on. I'm picking up something from your brain. Woo-woo-woo-woo-woo. You want to create a website without limits of me in a bathtub? Well, pish posh, Ashley. I don't know if that's appropriate. I'm a professor of small children.
That's okay. I'm over 18.
It's time for me to go. I'm just going to walk out. Ta-ta.
You're
going to
walk out?
I'm walking, Charles, to say.
Oh, wow.
Yes. Yep. Oh, hey, I'm back.
Oh, you missed this weird bald guy.
Yeah, he kind of smelled like bubbles.
Yeah, like bubbles. He was very charming.
Oh,
he was,
okay.
I would describe him as groovy.
Oh, he had a very groovy mutation, did he?
He was very groovy.
Okay, well, speaking of groovy, I think we are in to a top two.
Yes.
Of our X-Men list. Ashley.
Yeah.
Very intrigued. I'm very intrigued to find out what your top two X-Men stories are. What's your number two? What's your number two?
I'm going to say this. I suspect that this number two may also be on your list.
Let's find out.
New X-Men!
New X-Men what? There's lots of titles called New X-Men.
Specifically the Grant Morrison, Coom, Frank Quietly, Coom, all of the backup artists.
Are you talking about New X-Men 114 to 116, E is for Extinction?
That is the name of the first story arc.
Yes.
Yes, that's what I'm talking about.
That is also my number two.
Hey, look at that. I was really worried it was going to be your number one because I was pretty sure that this was going to be on your list.
You will never predict my number one.
I think you might be able to predict my number one. Maybe we'll try and see if we're psychic when we get to
something with Nightcrawler.
Number one. I just want to say that I knew this was going to be on Jason's list because Jason owns the complete run in the fancy hardcovers.
Yes, I do.
I specifically read the ES for Extinction arc in preparation for this list because I know it is lauded, I know it is celebrated, and I had easy access to it.
It's also on Marvel Unlimited.
Right. I mean,
all of these are on Marvel Unlimited
because all of them so far, barring our number ones, my number one is on Marvel Unlimited, are very key, very important.
Mine is, I'm pretty certain mine's on Marvel Unlimited. I think all of these are on Marvel Unlimited, yeah.
Great. They'll also all be on our recommended reading.
We'll get to that. So E for Extinction. You just read it. Why did it mark so high for you?
Because E for Extinction, I love almost everything Grant Morrison has done. Mm-hmm. I love most of his superhero stuff. I haven't read all of it, but what I like about his superhero stuff, and we've said it before, and I'll say it again, is it very much deconstructs and embraces everything that is great about a storyline or a character or a team or their themes, and then sort of rejiggers it with his weird Scottish magic and then interprets it for a modern age. ES for Extinction introduces Cassandra Nova, mm-hmm. who is Charles Xavier's sister.
Weird evil twin.
Yeah, she's not like quite his, but sister.
Yeah.
Okay, if you haven't read it, sister. Who we killed in the womb, but sister.
Weird evil twin.
And what I like about this is something that you and I talked about when we started doing X-Men Geek History Lessons is that Charles Xavier is kind of evil.
Yes, he is.
And Charles Xavier is very much a puppet master, and Charles Xavier only tells you as much as you need to know.
Mm-hmm.
And ES for Extinction is very much his children having to pick up the pieces of his, maybe not lies, but definitely lying by omission. And it's really interesting to watch them all have to fill those roles because it comes at a point in X-Men continuity where they're also falling apart. Like Scott and Jean are married at this point. Their marriage is in a really bad place. He kind of reinvents the wheel by bringing Emma Frost onto the team for the first time.
Who had been a villain.
Which is hilarious because now she's like a staple of the X-Men. Like she's in all of the X-books. He really, I don't think he introduces it here, but he really embraces the idea of secondary mutations.
This is the first time it ever happened.
Great. Then he invented it.
Yep.
Of course he did. He's a god. Because Beast gets Jason's favorite update that Beast has ever
had. And Emma Frost gets her diamond form.
Yeah. Which
and they kind of
for me is iconic for her. So I can't imagine it's that modern.
They kind of abandon that after the storyline. Nobody else really does secondary mutations.
Which
when you think about mutations, it would just keep evolving.
Yeah. But not all of them
and it keep changing.
Secondary mutation for me is a very like dangerous idea from a writer's standpoint. And I'm glad because there's an alternate universe where people rely on it too much.
Mm-hmm.
And then everyone suddenly gets these new random, like everyone becomes Rogue and Scarlet Witch who just always have new powers because of reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And that to me is deeply annoying. Whereas like the Emma idea and the Beast idea are really intelligent, really well thought out. My only real argument with it is I hate Emma Frost as a character, and they give her just the grossest, most cheesecakiest, most disrespectful of the fact that she is a woman costume. And I understand that Emma Frost...
Yeah, her costume doesn't work with gravity.
I mean, they literally draw the outline of her vulva in her shorts. And to me, that's just icky because X-Men should also, I think, be accessible to young people because of the subject matter it deals with. And for me, like, I have weird feelings about that. Emma Frost is also a character that I in no way do I believe that she is above using her sexuality to get what she wants. But there's a way to do that and still be respectful. And unfortunately, I don't think that embraces it. There's also like Frank Quitely's design of Scott Summers, which is not my favorite Scott Summers I've ever seen. But you kind of explained it to me, and he's embracing the idea that he's slim.
Yeah, he's called Slim.
And that is like an OG from the X-Men, number one, 1963, like original Cyclops idea. So even though there's a lot of really heady ideas here, when you step back and look at it, it's all a celebration of why we love the X-Men. And that's why I think it resonates with people. And that's why I think it still stands up as one of the best storylines. And then the idea of the U-Men is so true to what would happen if mutants were real. It frightens me. So why don't you tell me a little bit about why you love E is for Extinction, a.k.a. the new X-Men.
Like, one of the best things that Grant Morrison does is he updates tired concepts.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, the X-Men were dying because of their continuity. They were buried under alternate timeline hell because of Age of Apocalypse.
Yeah.
Everybody tried to replicate that storyline. There were hundreds of thousands of mutants in the world because every writer introduced a new mutant. And it kind of got lost about, like, what the hell is the point of the X-Men?
Mm-hmm.
And Grant Morrison embraced the thing that the movie did best. It said, like, oh, they're a school.
Yeah.
Before this run, the school was empty. The school was just a house where the X-Men lived.
Mm-hmm.
Grant Morrison put that back in the comic books. They are teachers.
Yeah. First and foremost.
They are kids, and this is an academy.
There are actually repeatedly, because Charles outs them at one point to the media.
And that's the first storyline this happens
where to. Where they are coming, the reporters are coming, and they're asking them, isn't this an army? Isn't he building an army? And Jean's like, no, it's a volunteer organization. We offer aid. Like, we are not an army. We are not militant.
I've heard it described as that Grant Morrison is the writer who drug the X-Men kicking and screaming into the modern era. And I kind of think that is true. Because they were kind of buried underneath Chris Claremont, and, like, nobody could escape Chris Claremont's storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
And Grant Morrison gave them what I think is the best X-Men costume of all time. That Dayglow jacket is so awesome, and I love, that's the only thing that was exciting me about Dark Phoenix, is that they adapted those jackets because they look cool. And they had these black leather little things, and I like the idea of the logo and the new X-Men. I like the idea, he was like, no, this is new X-Men, this is new, like, this is all different. And the idea is that, like, they're battling it. This is like a superhero book, this is a soap opera book, this is a relationship book.
Oh, it's very much a soap opera,
and it's a science fiction book. And I think by doing that and making it about everything, it really harkens back to the best X-Men stories we ever know, but yet updates it. I think Frank Quitely's art is amazing. The biggest downside about Grant Morrison's whole run is that the art is not consistent.
Mm-hmm.
But this is about fighting the future. This is about our legacy. And this is about, like, why are the X-Men needed in the world? And one of the best things, I think, there's two things this run did amazingly. One is it invented the X Corporation,
yep,
which is where mutants make embassies across the world to help humans.
Which is interesting because that's also a concept that you really like about the Amazons on the DC side. You like when Diana goes and participates in the embassies.
Yes, and I also like when Grant Morrison basically copied himself for Batman Incorporated.
Yeah.
Basically, he stole.
Yeah.
You could tell that he got that idea from this.
Yeah.
But the thing about this is that I think that this is actually the most forward-thinking, amazing, and probably the best Cyclops story of all time.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is the storyline that lets Scott move past Charles Xavier and past being just the character that goes, boy, I love Jean.
Yeah, yeah.
And he moves past both things. And again, Ashley has not finished this entire run.
No, I haven't.
And I'm specifically just talking about the first, you know, beginning, the E for Extinction storyline, which, by the way, great title. And again, seems dangerous, right? Grant Morrison, in his first issue, destroys Genosha.
Yes, yeah.
Like, murders 100,000 mutants in the first issue and makes their enemy seem dangerous. The X-Men
should
seem...
While Charles Xavier is inside Cerebra and he beholds it.
Yes, exactly. Now, when you finish the Grant Morrison run, if you make it all the way through his 40 or 35 issues, I think his last scene is one of the most powerful scenes in X-Men history. And I said this several times that for me, it's almost the ending of the X-Men. Like, mm-hmm. You can be like, that's it. That's where the story ends.
It's interesting because he also kind of writes the last Superman story.
And he also sort of writes the last Batman story. He likes to do, like, permanent, like, what could be considered the last ending.
Mm-hmm.
But E for Extinction, that is my number two. I'm surprised it made it so high.
Yeah, well, I think it's really great. Also, I was reading this the other day.
By the way, I own a Zorn action figure, by the way.
This is the first time that I understood that the X-Mansion is shaped like an X, and I felt really stupid. It's like, hey, look at that sky shot. Wow.
Yep. All right, Ashley, the time has come.
Yes.
What is your number one?
Oh, are you going to, you want to guess it? You want to try and be psychic?
Oh, I don't know. I don't, I honestly,
I mean, you joked something with Nightcrawler and, like, you're not wrong.
I mean, it's going to be something with Nightcrawler, but it's hard to think about, like, Nightcrawler's storyline. I don't know, honestly.
It's not Excalibur. I'm sure.
Well, I know that.
I'm sure we'll run into our also-rans, and I definitely thought about Excalibur. Mine is what is now known as all new, all different X-Men, and it debuted in Giant Size X-Men number 1, and this is the beginning of the Claremont era of X-Men.
Okay, you talk about the one-shot?
This is the one-shot that leads into that era,
okay,
yes.
Okay, that's Len Wein.
Well, not according to the thing that I have.
I'm very certain it's Len Wein. I'm sorry to correct you on air, but yes, it leads into the Claremont run.
Yes, because up to this point, the X-Men had been canceled. That book was driven into the ground, and there was no new stories for 5 years. So in 1975, this is what introduced this new team.
Yes, written by Len Wein. Illustrated by Dave Cockrum.
My mistake. Claremont takes over and writes the regular series.
Very soon. I will look that up to find out when Claremont jumps on.
That's totally fine. Clearly, my source, because you've corrected me a couple times, was in very
no. It's all
strokes.
Cool. The only reason I apologize to interrupt you. I don't want the listeners to think this is me constantly correcting you.
No.
But Len Wein is one of the greatest comic writers of all time.
Created Nightcrawler
and Wolverine.
Yes. Yeah, even but Wolverine is a Hulk character.
And Len Wein wrote that issue.
No, I know. But yeah, I just think that's interesting because Wolverine is not created as an X-Men character.
Actually, the whole reason why Wolverine is in this issue is because Len Wein was like, oh, I put this guy in Hulk.
Yes. So Len Wein wrote Giant Size X-Men. He introduced these characters. But this is what people think of as Claremont era X-Men. This brings on board to the team Nightcrawler, Colossus, Storm, and Wolverine, who for me, I think for everyone who engaged with the X-Men after 1975 or met them for the first time after 1975, those are like OG original X-Men. Okay, Chris Claremont came on board with the X-Men
94
and left the title in 1991. Basically all the 80s, he wrote the
X-Men. So he took all, you are correct on that this led off the Chris Claremont run, because that issue that you talk about, Giant Size X-Men, comes out in 1975.
Yeah.
And Claremont takes over X-Men in May of 1975 because he had expressed his enthusiasm for what Len Wein and Dave Cochran had created.
Oh, there you go.
So they gave him the book.
I share Claremont's enthusiasm. Mm-hmm.
But why this issue? Why is this the greatest X-Men story of all time?
Well, it's not specifically this issue, but it's like this era, which in their collections is called All New, All Different X-Men.
That's a bad title.
Yeah, it is.
Because there is actually an All New, All Different X-Men.
That's
so confusing, Marvel.
I know. You'll often find it under you can also find these in a bunch of Marvel Masterworks. This, for me, as an issue, like Giant Size X-Men number 1, because it introduced my X-Men, everything that I love about the X-Men comes from this issue. And then the sort of broader run, the Claremont era, because if you read the X-Men before Claremont comes on board, it's very much a team book. It's very much an action
book. Just superheroes.
Claremont introduces the interpersonal dynamics and the soap opera aspect that you've been bringing up.
And the subplot. He's the master of the subplot.
Which is both to the betterment and detriment when it's handled by lesser writers. Or honestly, when Claremont picks it up again later on. Like, I have so much respect for Chris Claremont operating during this era, and I think they should just pay him to retire.
He returned to the X-Men twice. After he ended his run in 91.
Yep.
He returned somewhere in the late 90s and then again somewhere in the mid 2000s. And both times it was not the same.
Uh-huh.
It was not, because he still wrote the comics like there was still 1992.
Yes. And it's just not.
Yeah.
And that's fine. And that happens to a lot of creators when they're invited back. But at his best, Claremont added that last little thing that for all of younger and more contemporary readers, people who kind of met the X-Men after him, we think of as being quintessential.
But let me talk about this. Okay, so because I'm going to... So what are you counting as the best X-Men story like? Because you named Giant Size X-Men number 1, not written by Claremont.
The collection, the one that I'm going to put on our recommended reading, is called All New, All Different X-Men, and it begins with Giant Size X-Men number 1.
And how far into the Claremont run does it go?
There are several volumes, but it collects all of the Claremont run through 91.
But it's like the first. So what happens in the original and like this stuff? Or like what happens in the storyline that makes you say like this is the greatest storyline? Is it just because it's the beginning of Claremont?
It's because it's the beginning of this era. It's because this is when they introduce all of these new characters, and they made the X-Men more of an international team. Like, Nightcrawler, Colossus, and Storm are all kind of diversity hires.
Isn't Banshee on this team, too?
Yes.
Oh, I love Banshee.
Banshee's...
Oh, the Banshee.
Banshee's fine.
Get over here, Wolverine.
There's a reason he's not as iconic as the rest. Even
oh,
Wolverine.
Oh, there's a reason. He was in X-Men First Class.
Yeah, he's barely adequate in First Class.
That's true.
They're all diversity hires because they're opening the X-Men beyond New York City for the first time. They're dealing with these characters and giving them real personalities. They're putting them in conflict. This is also one of the first times that the OG X-Men get to graduate. We get to see Jean and Scott and Hank.
They leave the team.
Leaving the team, becoming adult, and kind of getting more complex personalities. This is when X-Men became about people instead of becoming about an idea, which is difficult because X-Men started being about an idea. But this is where everything I love comes from. In our Nightcrawler episode, we talked about the Nightcrawler origin, where he's chased out of the tiny town in Germany. Like, for the first time, they're flying the Quinjet all over the world to collect people. Like, they're taking on responsibility in a way that we'd never seen them do before. And I think that this is another place where everything that we love about modern X-Men and about X-Men adaptations comes from.
Is it your argument that Chris Claremont is the greatest X-Men writer?
Yes, I would absolutely.
Oh, okay.
I would absolutely make that statement.
Hmm. Interesting.
And because I think when you go back and revisit them, I always make the joke that they're very wordy, but they're still great. They still feel relevant and contemporary in a way that the Stan Lee stuff doesn't, and that's mm-hmm. because it's the difference of 30 years versus 50 years. They recolored the Nightcrawler origin and put it in the back of one of the big X-Men ones where they retold all the history. Doesn't matter. Ed Pisker thing.
X-Men Grand Design.
They put it in the back of Grand Design.
Oh, Giant Size X-Men is in the first one,
and they
one, yeah.
recolored it.
Mm-hmm.
And it still holds up. And when it's recolored, it actually feels much more modern.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, everything I love about the X-Men comes from this era. So for me, it had to be my number one.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Jason.
Yes.
Now your time has come.
Okay. For what?
What is your number one X-Men story?
My number one X-Men story doesn't even have X-Men in the title. There is not X-Men in my title.
Okay.
I'm going to say a word that I think many fans have forgotten about, but is the greatest X-Men story of all time. X-Statics is the greatest X-Men storyline of all time. And by that, I am opening into the Pete Milligan and Mike Allred run that includes X-Force and X-Statics. Now, what many people don't realize is that when Grant Morrison took over New X-Men at the very same time, they rebooted every other X-Men title. And they gave Peter Milligan X-Force, which he rebooted into a brand new team with brand new characters that had never existed before. No longer were the members of X-Force, you know, like gun-toting, gritting, grim and gritty people. This is actually about a rowdy crew of mutants who were fame-hungry celebrities.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing about this book is that there were almost a character death every issue. There's a revolving door of cast members. And there is super familiar and, I think, super relatable characters, including people like Orphan, who is a.k.a. Mr. Sensitive. He's the team's de facto leader, a mutant with purple skin and two antennae. There is El Guapo, a sexy male mutant with a sentient flying skateboard. There is You Go Girl, who is the blue-skinned and red-headed narcoleptic teleporter who is once romantically linked to Zeitgeist and has a secret origin. And then somebody who Ashley loves, who comes from the series as well, the green floating spheroid ghost called Dupe.
Can I tell you something fun about Dupe?
Yeah.
In E for Extinction,
mm-hmm.
Jean is watching television and stuff is floating around her, and she has a dupe keychain.
Yeah. I believe there's an issue of New X-Men that you will see where they are watching X-Statics.
Yes.
And also, Wolverine, in his Frank Quitely costume, shows up in X-Force and X-Status several times because you learn that Dupe and Wolverine are best friends, and Wolverine owes Dupe favors.
Now, Dupe is low-key one of my favorite X-Men.
Well, the funny thing, too, is that Dupe does not speak in human language. He has mm-hmm. his own language, and Peter Milligan has given him a cipher. Like, there is a cipher. You can uh-huh. decipher all his word balloons. And it is my estimation that Dupe sounds something like... Like he sounds like that. He's like,
I also love that he operates much like the droids in Star Wars.
Yes.
You just have to assume everyone understands him.
Yes. And you also have to assume that he's ultimate powerful. Like he's unstoppable. Mm-hmm. We don't even know what his mutant powers are. But we can also at the same time, he knows he's in a comic book.
Oh, yeah.
Dupe can see beyond reality. Now, the reason why this is my number one X-Men title of all time is because it gets out of the superheroics and becomes about people. It literally takes head on this idea that this group of people are different from other people and really examines this. Now, these are people that have been hurt by their mutation. These are people that cannot live with their mutation. These are people that are not good people because of their mutation. They are suffering the effects because they are mutants. They're just something that we hardly ever see in regular X-Men titles. And it's something that would actually happen if you had mutations. You feel a little bit with Rogue, but it gets a little tired. And every once in a while you get a scene where Nightcrawler is like, oh, I'm sad, I'm blue, but he can teleport. Whereas like characters in Ecstatics, you know, like there's one character that vomits acidic acid. That's his mutant power.
Angel does that, who's also introduced in New X-Men.
Yes, that's a dangerous mutant power. But to be honest with you, there would be more mutants like that than there would be like Cyclops.
With cool powers.
Exactly. Now, the reason again is that this whole book is satirical. I think it has a level of style that's very interesting. It has a cynicism towards being superheroes. It like talks actively about how being superheroes are stupid. And I'm going to tell you what, the first issue of X-Force, of this title, all the main characters are killed off. They're killed off in the first issue. And then you are reintroduced to brand new characters in the second issue. And fun fact, there is a recurring joke throughout the entire series because it goes X-Force for like 20 issues and then it's renamed Ecstatics. But you can find this in collections called Ecstatics. Mm-hmm. There are characters in the series who lament that they want their X-Force back. And they it keeps coming back where they're like, where's my X-Force? But this book was so well received, and part of the reason is that the art in this book, unlike Grant Morrison's, is consistent. There are multiple artists in this book, but there are three guys who carry the most load: Mike Allred, Paul Pope, and Darwin Cook draw this book.
All very different styles, all highly stylized.
Yes.
There's none of this Jim Lee House style going on.
To me, Ecstatics proves the concept of the X-Men franchise more so than any X-Men storyline I've ever told, because they basically let Pete Milligan do whatever he wants. And I dare you to read the story of Yugo Girl and her secret mutant power, which I will not spoil. All I will say is it has something to do with a child that she cannot raise herself because of her mutant power. And I dare you to read that issue and not cry. It is more profound than any other X-Men story I've ever read. And I think the reason it's profound is because sometimes when you jump into satire, you become more real than an actual dramatic storytelling. And that's why Ecstatics is, I think, the greatest X-Men story of all time.
Nice.
So there you go. I told you you'd never predict my number one.
Nope.
So there you go. Our recommended reading, of course, Ashley, can be found where?
At geekhistorylesson.com/recommended-reading.
And it'll be our top three of each of our lists.
I mean, since we have so much crossover, it'll probably just be everything on our list.
Well, there you go. It'll be pretty easy. All right. So let's move into the final section of our podcast, the GHO Honor Roll, where if you go over to Apple Podcasts, and you leave us a review, or Apple Music, and you leave us a 5-star review, you can write anything you want, but for helping us in the Apple Podcast algorithm, we'll read your review on the show. I hate to say, I'm sorry, our foreign listeners, we're only checking the American Apple Podcasts.
Well, look, when we catch up, we'll go over to the...
Well, I don't know. Maybe since it's now Apple Podcasts, they'll all be filtered together. I don't know.
I don't know, and I don't know how to...
We're in a post-iTunes world now, people, and I have no idea how it operates.
I will say I sincerely hope that they do integrate everything, because we very much love and appreciate our foreign listeners.
Yes, we do.
Okay, so the first person... We have two people. The first of two joining our honor roll today is Jenna VB, who says... Listen for a good time. This is without a doubt my favorite podcast. Every week I tune in and it's as though I'm sitting around listening to my friends discuss and or debate their favorite things. You can tell every character, construct, or thing from pop culture that is discussed on this podcast has been thoroughly researched. My favorite episodes are the ones that highlight Jason and Ashley's favorite characters or topics because it makes me that much more excited to go read about them.
Aww.
That's really cute. I've learned a lot about characters and topics I only knew by name and found new favorites just by hearing their histories. They've convinced me to branch out and read or watch new things, and thanks to their recommended reading section, my list has tripled in size.
Yeah.
Long story short, if you're looking to expand your knowledge or are just curious about something you've never had the time to read before, this is the podcast for you. I promise you won't be disappointed.
Cool. Thanks for that review.
Thank you, Jenna VB. That's very kind. And joining, I'm assuming her, if not, sorry to make an assumption about your gender, is Breeze Nicole, who says, a must for anyone who loves comics and the characters in them. GHL is one of my favorite podcasts to listen to while commuting. As someone who grew up loving the characters in comic books and watched a ton of animated series, including Justice League and Superman, I developed a love for all things comic books. The problem is that I didn't actually grow up with access to comics, though I just started reading them now. GHL is perfect for the geek who loves the universes of DC, Marvel, and more, and wants background knowledge without having to catch up on decades of continuity. Give GHL a try. After one, you'll be hooked. Thank you so much for your kind words and your amazing reviews, Breeze Nicole and Jenna VB. Professor Jason, we'll welcome you to the Teacher's Lounge.
Welcome to the Teacher's Lounge. Over here is a dartboard from Mr. Hunter. What? And you can play it anytime you like.
What does Mr. Hunter teach again?
Mr. Hunter teaches European medieval fighting tactics.
Ooh, I
so trebuchets and all that stuff.
He's trying to build a trebuchet.
You can build as many trebuchets as you like.
Wow,
he loves it. They put him on the football field.
Well,
and the football team gets angry.
We don't have a football team at the Mind University.
Yes, we do. We have a football team.
We have a polo team.
And we have a polo. We have both. And we have underwater horse polo
as well. Yeah.
Look, don't limit our students. They can do anything they want with their mind.
Okay, as long as they're doing it with their
yes.
mind. That's
so
fine.
Thank you so much for leaving us those reviews over on Apple Podcasts. If you want to join the honor roll, please do the same. It really helps us. Don't forget to subscribe and listen to this podcast and download this podcast everywhere you can find podcasts on Apple Podcasts, Spotify. We're on Stitcher. We're on all kinds of stuff. iHeartRadio. You can find us over there. And don't forget to follow the podcast. Where, Ashley, on Twitter?
You can contact us at on Twitter at GHL Podcast, at facebook.com/geekhistorylesson, or at geekhistorylesson.com. There's a whole bunch of ways to contact us in all of those places.
Cool. You can follow us on Twitter at Jawin, J-A-W-I-I-N. You can follow Ashley on Twitter at Ashley V. Robinson. And she already said where you can follow the show. Hashtag stick around. Real quick, we have a Patreon, patreon.com/Jawin, J-A-W-I-I-N. There we're going to be talking about, why is it so hard to write a good X-Men story? That's what we're going to be talking about. So for hashtag stick around, let's see if you followed us through all the plugs. Ashley, what did you almost put on your list? What almost made it on there?
So I made a list of just X-Men stories that I think are great, and I sort of tried to go and find what they're appropriately called because some of them, who knows? Some of the ones that didn't make it onto my list are X-Men Grand Design, which I can never remember the name of, the all-new X-Men, but I would have had to put a huge caveat about only certain volumes that you can read, X-Men Red, but that's only one volume. I thought about Wolverine Volume 1, Old Man Logan, and Enemy of the State, but I wanted to pick stories that sort of more fully embraced all the X-Men, and Excalibur was also on my short list. So. Mm-hmm. A lot of great X-Men stories, but also a sea of bad ones. Jason, what were ones that you considered?
I mean, the only one that I ever considered putting on this list was God Loves, Man Kills, mm-hmm. which is the graphic novel that Chris Claremont did. So I didn't have any. I kind of knew what this list was going out the gate.
Yeah.
And I'm not a big. I know a lot of people out there are probably screaming, "Where's Astonishing X-Men by Joss Whedon?" I have found on subsequent readings that does not hold up at all.
My hot take is Volume 2 is terrible.
Mm-hmm. I just think when the X-Men are fighting a giant bullet in space, it's not that interesting.
What people like about Astonishing X-Men
is the art.
Is the art. Is that splash page of Kitty and Colossus. Mm-hmm. It's gorgeous.
I mean, the art is amazing, but I don't think the art a good story makes. So
for
that's
me, for me, it doesn't with comics, no.
Yeah. But other than that, like, no, I didn't have any other outliers on here. I mean, I considered there's a Magneto web series, or miniseries.
The Colin Bunn series?
No. It's called Magneto, Last Will and Testament, and it's the origin of Magneto. First Class stole a lot of it, or used a lot of it, and it's about Magneto surviving the camps. That's a very interesting storyline, but it's not really an X-Men story. It's just a Magneto being in, you know, Germany. So there you go.
Sure.
Didn't think it was that much of an X-Men. I really wanted titles and storylines that promoted...
I also thought about putting X2 on there because...
I would have called shenanigans on you on that one.
Well, we've included TV episodes in the past. But I thought about that because I feel like that's when they broke really big in the larger pop culture spectrum, was with that movie. But then I didn't. So that was a thought. I had that thought.
All right. Thanks so much for listening. This has been Geek History Lesson. I am Jason Homo Superior Inman.
I am Ashley Victoria Robinson. And Professor Jason, would you please dismiss the class?
Class dismissed.